welcome to another episode of The Window. This is our midwinter episode where we're in between tournaments. The World Cup has concluded. The Gulf Cup has concluded. The AFF Championship has concluded. And we're eagerly anticipating what's going to happen in March with the start of Euro 2024 qualifying, the conclusion of the CONCACAF Nations League. And this is really a transition period where we're ending a cycle. That World Cup cycle has concluded, and now we're turning the page and looking a little bit ahead to what's to come, who's going to be playing in continental tournaments, and then ultimately looking forward to the 2026 World Cup as well. So welcome. Thank you all for joining us. Joe, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing good. It's been an eventful day. We're exactly 500 days away from the start of Euro 2024.
Incredible.
And it's also transfer deadline day. So, you know, it's been interesting to see where some of these players are going or maybe not going. You know, I think the Ziyech deal is still, I think I just saw that there's something with paperwork issues. So he's not actually at PSG just yet. But if that pulls off, then that'll be potentially, I think, a good move for him. So.
Yeah, and a lot going on right now. And, of course, we chose today to record exactly because it is 500 days before Euro. But that is just a happy coincidence for us. And so we wanted to take a look at really what's been happening since the World Cup. And things have changed. Players have retired, coaches are out, coaches are in. As I mentioned before, this is really that transition period where you're looking at what has happened and how we're going to move into the next cycle. So I think to start with what we wanted to recap first was some of the international player retirements, because there are a number of big ones. Following the conclusion of the World Cup, a number of players have come out and said that their international careers are over. I think to start with, I wanted to ask Joe, one, were you surprised by any of these retirements that we'll get into? I know we have a list of a number of players, but were you surprised by any of these players that have announced their retirement thus far?
Actually, not horribly. I think, mm-hmm. you know, there might be one, and when we touch on him, I'll make sure to mention it. But the rest, no, I was not... not, I guess, overly surprised. You know, you kind of look at these players' careers and you're like, okay, yeah, it kind of makes sense. Like, it's time to move on, let somebody else come in behind you, see what they can do. So, yeah.
Yeah. So we've got a list of maybe 9 players here. I'll just run through them quickly and then we can get into talking about each of them. So Eden Hazard of Belgium has announced his retirement. Walid Khazri of Tunisia, Karim Benzema of France, Sergio Busquets from Spain, Andre Onana from Cameroon, Gareth Bale from Wales, Sacha Kljestan from the USA, Hugo Lloris from France, and Kostas Mitroglou from Greece. So 9 names, a couple guys that you've really felt were going to be out. But one of the ones I wanted to start with that I find interesting on this list is Andre Onana. And I'm not sure if that's the guy that you were thinking about. That was a little bit unexpected to start with.
Yes.
But there were some issues at the World Cup where he didn't even wait until the end of the World Cup to leave the team. He left during the World Cup. Mm-hmm. Is he the name you were thinking of in terms of surprises, given that he's really Cameroon's number one keeper?
Yeah, he is actually. That to me is kind of, I don't know if shocking is the right word, but definitely surprised to see that. I felt like, A, he still has time left and something to offer. And B, you know, you just kind of wonder if whatever happened at the World Cup, you know, if there's now bad blood or something like that, you know. So it's just kind of a weird situation. And, yeah, I mean, I guess all the best to him. I just wonder if maybe he's somebody that we might be like in a year saying, oh, he's back.
That's what I'm thinking also is we've seen it happen before. And he definitely felt like one to me where it might not be 100% final. But yeah, his exit from the World Cup, was certainly premature, and it'll be interesting to see what happens there, because that was certainly unexpected to me. And he has been in more recent years one of the leaders for Cameroon, so it'll be curious to see if he stays retired or not.
Yeah, agreed. And I guess we should mention, this isn't a comprehensive list. There are probably others who have announced their retirement, and we just perhaps didn't catch them. And these are just the ones that, we've really caught, so to speak.
Yeah, I think probably the biggest in terms of just visibility is Gareth Bale, because he not only announces retirement from Wales, he also announces retirement in period. Which you
And now
think of
he's
Wales,
a pro golfer now.
he is. Well, that was the second in his order, correct? So he left number one Wales. He's shifted to number two golf. Perhaps at some point he'll come back to number three Madrid, because it is Wales, golf, Madrid in that order. But you think about Wales for the last 10 plus years, right? And how much they've achieved. Euro 2016 obviously sticks out as an incredible performance. And he will be missed, and he is, I would argue, irreplaceable, just in terms of what he has meant for his country over a number of years. And I'll be very interested to see what happens with Wales, because Wales obviously was at the World Cup. They didn't have the best showing. I think in talking to different people think that Wales could be arrow pointing down a little bit on a go forward basis. He really feels like the name to me on this list that will be missed the most.
Yeah, I think in terms of impact, I think that's not far off. I also think actually, I think there's two others that you could make that argument for too. I think Benzema is one of them, and France is obviously stacked, and are they going to miss him terribly? Probably not, because they have a lot of players coming in behind him who are going to take his spot with ease. But he was a really great player for France, scored a lot of goals. And so I think there's something to be said for his impact in the France team. The other one I would say is actually Kadri from
Yeah, I
Tunisia.
was thinking of
He's
him as well.
been a huge player for Tunisia down the years. And you could see it when he went off the field in the last game for Tunisia in the World Cup. He kind of got a little send off, and yeah, he's been great for them. So, yeah, it's I guess those would be other two mentions I would say in terms of impact that's going to be missed. Yeah, what are you anything else? What are you thinking with this?
I'm curious to see the one thing that just, I mean, Hugo Lloris to me is always a conflicting character, I would say, because I recently saw just someone cut up just some of his clips where he's just making horrible plays, and he's had so much positive to contribute. I am not sure the consistency was always there with him. And he's been France's number one for a while. I recall back in my mind, they were playing Sweden in a qualifier, and he just, I guess, decided that he was wanted to dribble the ball almost to midfield, lost it, and then Sweden scored from basically midfield into an open net. And it's not an isolated incident. I'm curious to see how that impacts France. Because to your point, with Benzema, France is very strong. They have tons of depth. But goalkeeper is the one real constant for them over the years. You look at who was on the roster for the World Cup 2018 versus 2022. Some similar players, not a whole lot. Kanté was obviously injured. Mbappé was at both, of course, but the last World Cup was a little bit before, but Lloris has kind of been that rock for France, and I'm not sure if it's going to be a good thing or a bad thing. I think that's something I'm going to be really interested to see, really how that changes on a go forward basis.
Yeah, agreed. What about Busquets? Do you For me, it's kind of the last of I guess that generation. He was kind of hanging on, I think, for another one, and I guess it's not horribly surprising.
I think the one difference with Busquets, I feel with Spain, is I feel that other players on the roster have really passed him. And that is no disrespect to Busquets. He has been phenomenal for many, many years. With the young talent that Spain has, especially in the midfield, I do feel that of these players, especially that we're looking at, you look through these other names and you think, okay, maybe they have someone that could be at the level of some of these players. And in most instances, there are not. Busquets to me feels like the one where the next guys coming in could be better. And I think it was time for him. And again, no disrespect to everything that he's accomplished throughout his career. But it seemed inevitable that he was going to hang it up after the World Cup.
You could kind of tell it was coming.
Eden Hazard's another interesting one that Belgium, obviously, we'll talk a little bit more about them when we get into the coaching carousel. But he's one that I think just he was so dominant for such a long stretch of time. And I think he's kind of shifted more into that contributor role. Where again, he's going to be a loss for Belgium. I don't know that he was basically at this point contributing anywhere near what he was previously. So another one that I'm also not all that surprised that he's decided to move on.
No, I totally agree.
Right. I think that is a somewhat comprehensive list of the big names that have announced their retirement. Of course, we're only, a month plus removed from the end of the World Cup. So I think we'll hear more as time goes on of players deciding to put an end to their international career. We've got more European qualifiers coming up and others as well, where it'll be interesting to see how that changes over time, but I'm sure that list will continue to grow. All right. So with player exits, we also have some coaching exits, and perhaps unsurprisingly, the list of coaching changes is longer than the list of player retirements. And I think with international football, that's the one constant is change, is that when you see managers keeping their position for 3, 4+ years, that feels more the exception than the norm. But there are a lot of names on this coach's out list that were in that bucket. And let's start with talking about Belgium. Let's start with Roberto Martinez, because he is actually the only one on this list, unless I am missing anything, but I don't believe I am, the only one on this list that has exited an international manager role and also signed on in a new international manager role.
Yes, as the new manager
Of Portugal.
Portugal.
And that was a bit surprising to me. I did not
Oh,
expect that. And it was quick.
I
It
think
was
it shocked
quick.
the world.
And yeah, it did. Go ahead.
I was gonna agree with you. It was really quick. We heard he was gone, and then boom, he pops up in Portugal, and yeah, I what are your thoughts on that? Because for me anyways, I guess I haven't been horribly impressed by him and his time in Belgium. This was supposed to be a golden generation for Belgium. This was supposed to be, perhaps the best that they've ever had. And I think not even coming away with any trophy is interesting.
The highest and best he did with Belgium was a semifinal,
Exactly.
not even getting the team to a final. So
Which is in and of itself is not bad, but
it's not, but it's like I'm so torn about it too, because I totally agree. On the one hand, he underachieved. I don't think there's any debate that if you look at the quality of Belgium over the years and what you would have expected them to achieve, they fell short. I think he would tell you that. At the same time, I look at a game like Belgium and Croatia in the final group stage match of the World Cup, and how many chances Romelu Lukaku had.
I know.
And ultimately, when it comes down to it, he's not out there playing. And is it Roberto Martinez's fault that they did not win that game against Croatia? Maybe. I think that's a fair criticism. But I don't know. It's just, how much is the manager left of the players? And I think personally, I think I like the hire for Portugal. I think Ronaldo is basically out. He wasn't on that list of international retirements yet. But I think Portugal's kind of changing the guard, really, with Bruno Fernandes and Bernardo Silva and a number of the young players they have. It'll be interesting to see if Rafael Leão really starts to take more of a leadership role. Obviously, they had, Gonçalo Ramos was phenomenal. And so I think Portugal's shifting, and I think Portugal could be headed more towards that longevity of, hey, we've got a good, really good young core. This guy's got a proven track record of being with a country for a while. And yes, it's like he did not win Euro. He did not win the World Cup. He did get Belgium to the semifinal. It's not where they would want to go, but I think I like the hire. I think he's going to do well at Portugal.
Yeah, for me, the jury's still out.
Yeah.
I just struggle to see that he can take Portugal, that he can do something different with Portugal than he did with Belgium. And it's difficult because I guess so Belgium has a lot of talented players, but you know that the conveyor belt of talent in Portugal is seems to be much more regular than it does coming from Belgium. And hopefully, that's nothing against Belgium, and I'm sure it's, they're building it. I mean, they've got plenty of talent and plenty of talented academies, Anderlecht and all that. But with Portugal, you always hear about these Portuguese players that are moving for, big sums of money. And it's always like the next big talent is coming from Benfica or Braga or or Sporting or Porto, right? Like, so I guess my biggest question is, can he take that and do something with it? And it's not that I'm unsure that he can't, because I think he's a very talented coach. I've actually He commentated for a long time, or did in he did studio analysis for a long time here on ESPN in the States, and so I've listened to him talk a lot, and so it's obvious that he knows what he's doing. I'm still kind of sitting on the fence, like, is he going to be able to deliver a Euro championship for Portugal? I don't know. How's he gonna work with Ronaldo if he's going to work with Ronaldo, as you mentioned? Is there going to be a real changing of the guard there? I mean, who knows? It kind of feels like it. He's Ronaldo's kind of sailed off into the sunset, into the desert. And so, yeah, just a lot of questions for me, I feel like.
I think they could have gone two routes, and I think you can always, I think the idea, or kind of the latest thing is let's get a former player in and try to strike lightning really quick, where this player knows the players, knows the country, knows the system, and maybe we can win quickly. Roberto Martinez feels more like of a like a longer haul coach, where I don't think they're going to give him just Euro qualifying cycle and then just move on. It feels like a hire that they want him to be around for multiple qualifying cycles.
And I will say this, I've seen reports and pictures of him, he's doing his homework. He's not
Yeah.
just scouting out the, I guess the top four teams in Portugal. He's going to all the teams throughout the league. Like he is truly digging in and trying to figure out, okay, who's coming up? Who should I be watching? Right? Like I don't remember exactly the game that he was at, but it was something like Rio Ave versus like Maritimo or something like that. I can't remember, but so I think that's a huge plus in his bucket, for us who are kind of watching him, but also for all the Portuguese people who are watching him too.
Yeah. I think it's a great situation to land in. I think with, to your point, just the number of players that have really just blossomed and are coming through that Portugal league system. I think it's a great situation to land in with a really good team that is going to contend for a while.
I guess the final comment I have on him is there's a little bit of a question in my mind too. Was he their first choice? Because I wonder if they went to Mourinho first and tried to get him, which they're not the only federation who's trying to do that. Yeah, so that's an interesting thought as well.
I didn't hear them reaching out to Zidane, but
I didn't hear that one either. I heard
it
it from somewhere else, which I'm sure we'll talk about shortly.
All right. Let's talk about another country that is close by. Let's talk about Spain. And personally for me, I was surprised that Luis Enrique was out. It's amazing how quickly things change, because during the group stage, up until the match against Japan, right? They played their first two matches. They played against Germany, they played against Costa Rica. You had people saying that Spain is the best team in the world. You had people saying that Spain was going to win the World Cup, that Luis Enrique's tactics were phenomenal and unmatched. And basically 3 weeks later, he's gone. Do you think they pulled the trigger a little too quickly on Luis Enrique?
Yes, I do. I think I don't know. It feels very much like what the Spanish Federation does. They tend to make snappy decisions sometimes. And this definitely feels like one, especially because they brought in Luis de la Fuente. And I guess in my personal opinion, I think they're better off with Luis Enrique.
I don't think you're alone in feeling that way.
So yeah, I think it was probably not the greatest decision, but they did it. And I don't know. In my personal opinion, I don't think there's anything. I don't think there's any shame in going out to Morocco on that was on penalties, right? Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, that's probably not how you guys wanted to end your World Cup campaign, but I mean, I don't know.
It'll be interesting to see where he heads, because he's like a Spanish guy through and through. He's played his entire career in Spain, has managed Spain, played for the Spanish international team, managed Barcelona. He's a Spain guy. It'll be interesting to see where he heads if he decides to take another national team job. I don't know if he has interest in doing that, but to me, he's a name that's out there that has a lot of appeal for countries if you're looking for someone new. I think people think very highly of him. And I don't know that Spain is better off, but it might have been one of those situations where you look at, okay, he hasn't won us a trophy in these two cycles, and that's kind of how it goes with international football. It's rare that a team that has aspirations as high as Spain does doesn't win and the manager sticks around. That doesn't mean they shouldn't. It's just, it does not happen often. So I'm curious to see what happens with Spain. I was not thrilled with that move for them. I don't really think they're necessarily better off.
No, I agree. And Enrique, I got it. He's gonna land in Chile.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's gonna be Chile. No, but it wouldn't surprise me at all, actually, if the right offer comes from
Yeah.
maybe a South American country, if maybe he decides to take a gander at that. Like, I mean, I don't know. You never know. But
Yes.
Argentina maybe a couple years down the road. I don't
He'll
know.
definitely be an interesting team, interesting guy to keep an eye on to see where he lands. And they did call it a resignation.
A resignation.
He
There's
stepped down because of the team's performance. So there were a few like that were a bit curious. Roberto Martinez being one. Okay. Where do you want to head next? Do you want to head to Ghana?
Yeah, let's do it. So Ghana, the crazy carnival, bringing in coaches left and right. And
Oh,
oh,
yeah.
I think going into the World Cup, though, I think we already kind of knew that Otto wasn't going to like stick around, right?
Yeah.
Like, that wasn't that already kind of decided more or less?
I think so. I think so. Which is okay. I think like Ghana's a team we've talked about a lot, right? Where they're bringing in a lot of new players. And so it'll be interesting to see where they turn to managers and will they try to find someone that maybe aligns a little bit better with some of the new players and is more familiar with the newer players. But they're an interesting one that I think they're kind of at that turning point where they've been to the World Cup. They performed better than I thought they would, for sure. But they really need someone that's really going to take them and turn the corner, because they had a horrible showing at AFCON, and they're looking to get back. And I think they need someone strong that's really going to bring all of those players together, and has, I think, a little bit more of a managerial history than Otto did.
And I just wonder who that is. Like, no, there's not any names that are really like sticking in my mind at the moment for like who could come in and do that. And part of that is probably because I'm not as well versed on the African scene as maybe, some of our listeners or whatever. But I do agree. They need somebody who's going to come in and help them take the next step forward. Right. And that's I think that you have to challenge for AFCON.
Agreed.
To me that seems like the next clear step for Ghana. And then after that, you look at not just challenging but winning it, but then also, after that, then you start looking at, okay, like what can we do in the World Cup, right? So yeah. It's going to be interesting. And as far as we're aware, like they haven't named any sort of replacement yet.
No. No,
So
it's vacant. So we'll see how it goes. Yeah, they're still looking for someone to lead them, and a lot of new players, a lot of new faces. So yeah, it'll be interesting to keep an eye on really what happens there.
well, and you would think that would be an attractive opportunity
I
for
think so
someone,
too.
because as you just mentioned, they have such young, exciting players, tons of potential,
Yeah.
right? Like, so, you know, go Ghana. I hope they find the right person.
Indeed. Indeed. Speaking of other coaches leaving, Paolo Bento from South Korea, who made it out of the group stage at the World Cup, but he is no longer the manager of the South Korean football team. So what were your thoughts on Paolo Bento, how he did at the World Cup? Did you expect him to be out? And how do you think he did as manager? He's been there for a while, since 2018.
Yeah. So I think he exceeded, we certainly exceeded all my expectations at the World Cup. I did not expect South Korea to do what they did.
Yeah.
I think there are a lot of other people who feel similar to me. But I do think that he has been really good for South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am a little sad to see him go. My understanding is that they were trying to actually get him to stay. But he decided that he wanted to leave. That's my understanding. He's off to a new adventure, and I think he leaves South Korea in a little bit of a better position than maybe he came in as. You know, there were a lot of conversations and a lot of chat about his tactics and his player choice. You know, he had a tendency to stick with some players that maybe some people were like over.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, wanted to see other players there instead. Mm-hmm. So now South Korea has the opportunity to find somebody to do that. And it'll be interesting to see if they try to go with somebody who is maybe more familiar with their domestic scene versus a foreign coach, or if they are going to stick with a foreign coach again. You know,
I'm just looking through that roster. They're the players are a little bit older. Just looking through some of the players that have been more capped, that were kind of key players at the World Cup. Most of them are 25 or over. There's a few that are not. But most of their roster is 25 to 30, maybe even a couple years older than 30. And so it'll be interesting to see where they head, because it seems like a team that, when you're thinking 4 years down the line at the next World Cup, they're going to be there. Like, there's no doubt, with as many slots that they are going to be there. So I think it'll be interesting to see how they really approach this coaching search. Do they try to bring someone in that's going to be there further down the line? Do they try to bring someone in that's going to be more focused on the Asian Cup in the short term, and then kind of figure it out once they get a little bit closer to the World Cup, just knowing, like, they're going to be there. They have more than enough talent to finish among the top eight in Asia. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see if they bring in someone that's going to be a little bit more geared towards some of this current roster that's a little bit older, or do they maybe think about, okay, well, who do we have that's going to really develop some of the younger talent on the roster?
Yeah. Yeah. So agreed. Yeah.
Will be interesting to see what happens. I will go down the list in order. We've got an interesting one next in Tite.
Yeah.
Exhaling about Tite. I mean, I think a lot of people expected Brazil to win the World Cup. Like, you asked, we had how many people on our show?
Oh yeah, I'm one of them.
We asked, all right, who do you think is going to win the World Cup? And many, many people said Brazil.
Yeah.
But it kind of feels like it was his time to go. He's been there had been there since middle of 2016.
Mm-hmm. And this was his second stint too, I'm pretty sure.
It was. He won the Copa America. I think he's done a great job for Brazil, but it feels like it was probably the right thing and the right time for him to move on.
Yeah. So Chiche is an interesting one because he the timing, I mean, I think everybody knew after this World Cup, regardless of whether or not they won it, he was on his way out.
Yeah.
So that was, that was pretty well known. But him and Brazil are just, I don't know, it's like a shoe that perfectly fits, right? And so to try to find somebody who can replicate that, I think is going to be tricky. But again, maybe not. I mean, there's going to be a lot of people who would love to have that, that job and work with that group of players. You want to talk about a conveyor belt of talent. Brazil's another one, right? it's going to be really, really interesting to see who they bring in and what that individual can do and what changes they make. Because it's stacked. They're just stacked. So.
They are. And the 6 years that Tite was at Brazil, 6 years is the longest tenure any manager has ever had as manager of the Brazilian national team. So
there you go.
It was almost inevitable that would change. And I think it was expected as well. And had they won, had they not won, I think it likely would have ended the same way. But I do think you make a great point. It's just when you have a team that is so talented and has just top to bottom as much talent as Brazil has, it's almost about not getting in the way. What can you do? You can help these guys. You can try to help them bond, but it's I think more about just ensuring that these guys play to their potential and doing everything they can do. And sometimes that means doing less. So it'll be interesting to see where they turn. I don't think they have anybody. They're one of the teams that just everybody, the whole coaching staff, they're just kind of bringing in new coaching. So the one thing that I think is different about Brazil than any of the countries we've talked about thus far, with perhaps the exception of South Korea, Brazil doesn't really have anything to play for in the near future, right? The Copa America is not until next year in the summer in 2024. We'll talk about that a little bit. There are rumors that CONMEBOL World Cup qualifying is going to start later in 2023. I don't know if that's 100% confirmed yet, but that's really it. And so Brazil, I think, has some time. I think they're going to take some time and try to figure out who the right person is. They may not name someone in the near immediate future, but I think because they have time until really their next meaningful game, I think they would be well served to really do their due diligence and take some time making that selection.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Another one that was, I think we've talked about a few here, but another one that was, I think, a little certain headed into the World Cup. And if you asked our guest of Mexico, he would tell you that it was certain that Tata Martino was going to be done at Mexico after the World Cup. That officially did happen. So I don't think that coaching change or coaching vacancy was all that surprising.
Mm-hmm.
But Mexico in general feels like they're struggling. They did not get out of the group at the World Cup. In World Cup qualifying, even they struggled. We talked about that for a while on the show. Mexico feels like they need some real life injected into their national team. Where do you think they turn to find that?
Yeah, so it's interesting that you ask that. I guess in terms of a person to come in and fill that spot, I'm not 100% sure. I know that there's been rumblings that Miguel Herrera is on his way back in, which, I think everybody would love.
Yeah.
Or I don't know. I would love it just because,
I would as well.
he's a total gift machine. So anyways, but
That is
yeah.
true.
No, it's I guess another piece to answer this question is today, the Federation, in conjunction with Liga MX, released their plan for like the next couple years, and I haven't had an opportunity to sift through it yet, but I think, or I'm hoping that at least in there, one of the things that it talks about is, preparing players in Mexico to go to Europe and kind of trying to push them. I think whoever comes in as the next manager needs to maybe try to push that a little bit, because I saw an interesting graphic today that was comparing the number of players that and the number of minutes that they're playing in Europe between Canada, the US, and Mexico. And the US had this long list of players that had
Mexico's
over,
probably less, right?
oh,
Oh,
way
I'm sorry.
less. Oh yeah, and Canada too, but Mexico, I think there's only like four or five players. And in fact, if I'm not mistaken, was it yesterday or the day before? I'm pretty sure Irving Lozano has come back to Mexico. Don't quote me on that,
Now,
but
that one I did not see.
yeah, but anyways, the point remains the same that if they're going to continue to improve, they need the majority of their team to get out of Liga MX, and I would argue even MLS, right? Like, I think MLS has come a long way, and I think it's going to continue to grow. And so at this point, I think maybe it's like slightly better in terms of quality than maybe Liga MX, right? But again, obviously the best play in Europe, and that's where you need to go, right? And so I think that's going to be something that you're going to want to try to drive whoever comes into that seat next, right? And I think the Federation realizes that as well. So it'll be really interesting to go through and kind of comb through whatever their plan is that they just released today.
I almost feel like that's an argument against Miguel Herrera. It's just he feels like a known quantity, and I think Mexico needs a little bit more of a push. Where I was mentioning previously about the desire to strike lightning in a bottle and find a coach that's super familiar with the national team, maybe a former player that's going to come in and really push the team to get
Oh,
results quickly.
do you have someone in mind?
Not particularly,
Okay.
but I think there are some players you look at who has left the national team in the past few years. I'm not sure if there are players specifically that have retired that have moved into coaching. I'm not as familiar with that, but something like that where you look at, to your point about looking at who's in Europe, it's not only that they're not a substantial number of players in Europe. The players that are in Europe, they've been around for a long time. They're the older players. Even Chucky Lozano is going to be 28 years old this
Yeah.
year.
And he has not left Napoli, by the way. I was wrong.
No, okay.
I thought I saw that somewhere, but
He's going to be
clearly not.
28 this year. Raul Jimenez is going to be 32 this year. Andres Guardado is 36. Eric Gutierrez is in the Netherlands. Edson Álvarez is in the Netherlands. They're 27 and 25, respectively. So they're a little bit on the younger end. But you don't have, like, when you look at the United States, these 19, 20, 21-year-old players that clubs are signing for big money, that they're the next big thing. I think Chucky Lozano was in that boat when he went to Napoli. But really, since then, I don't really think we've seen that for Mexico, is that development, moving those players that are really young to Europe. And so I think that's a great point about Mexico, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with them. Because I feel like they need just some energy in that squad.
Yeah, I agree. I have two thoughts. So first thought is, no, I'm pretty sure it was last season. So Liga MX, you know, they have the Clausura and the Apertura, right? So it's almost like their season is like split, even though it's one whole season, I guess. Anyways, it's kind of weird. The coach for, was it Pachuca? Maybe it was Pachuca or Pumas, one of those two. I can't, and I apologize. I don't know his, I can't remember his name, but I just remember seeing that everybody was like super hyped on him, and he was like, he's got them playing really nice football, and like everybody was just like praising him. And I just wonder if maybe he's somebody that they could look at to maybe bring that in, and you know, he'd be familiar with a lot of the players that he'd be working with, having, you know, coached in Liga MX. He'd be very familiar with, you know, clubs and personnel, and he'd have a lot of relationships already. So he might be someone to look at. The other thing that I just thought of, which you want to talk about lightning striking in a bottle or whatever. What if Mexico goes out and tries to get Luis Enrique?
That would be interesting. That would be very interesting, actually.
Yeah, that would.
I don't know if Luis Enrique would be interested, but I mean,
Like, I think.
that seems like a name where you would say, okay, he should probably be towards the top of our list.
Yeah. I do agree. I think it could be a little bit of a tough sell. But I mean, I don't think the Mexican Federation, and I could be completely wrong, but I don't think that they're like hurting for cash. So
I would agree.
I don't think the financial piece of side of things is a real issue. So you don't have to worry about that. I just wonder, I don't know. To me, that is an interesting prospect. So
I would agree. I would agree. I
just
think
gonna
that is
throw
an
that out there.
interesting.
Yeah.
That would be interesting. But yeah, if I'm Mexico and just thinking about it, I would probably go the route of let's try something different and new that's not a little more of the consistency that we've seen. But we'll see. I think they're a team that I am curious to see from a timing perspective. We were just talking about Brazil and how they don't have anything. Mexico's not in that boat. They have the Gold Cup this summer, they have the CONCACAF Nations League. Now, which we'll talk about a little later in the show, the CONCACAF Nations League is also going to feed the Copa America. So there's a lot more in the short term in CONCACAF to play for. So it will be interesting to see how quickly they move to fill that role because we're at the end of January now. They're playing CONCACAF Nations League matches in March. So it'll be interesting to see if they hire someone before then or if they decide to go with maybe an interim route, as they're still exploring their options. All right. So Mexico is an interesting one. And then the last name that we have on, actually, there's one more afterwards, but was, I think he was disappointed in how the Netherlands finished, especially after they defeated the USA. They were playing really well. They were people's pick to go pretty far in the World Cup as well. But just kind of hearing everything about Louis van Gaal, and I mean, he is 71 years old, and I think it's not all that surprising that he's done with the Netherlands. I thought he did a great job. Yeah, I think they certainly fell short of where they wanted to be, but I thought under him the Netherlands were a really enjoyable team to watch, and I think they did great. Ultimately, just fell short. It was just a tough path getting through with the World Cup with where they were situated in that bracket. They obviously towards the end lost to Argentina, who won the World Cup. It was came down to penalties. I mean, you lost in penalties to the team that won the World Cup. So, it's hard to look back and say, they really just didn't do what they should have done. They've been playing phenomenally, so I'm personally going to miss Louis Van Gaal. I don't know him personally, but I will miss watching him coach.
Yes. Yeah, no, I agree. And yeah, I think, now that I think back on it more, I think the Argentina Netherlands game was probably one of my favorite games, if not my favorite game in the entire World Cup. Like, that was incredible. But yeah, King Louis, or I'm sad to see him go. I agree. I think, he has a dry sense of humor, first of all, so some of the content that they put out has just been fun to watch. So I'll miss that, but no, I'm excited to see what Koeman can do. Ronald Koeman's coming in, and so I'll be, I'll be excited to see what he can do with the team. And yeah, it's there's a shift going on in the Netherlands for sure. But I still think that they're a really strong team, and yeah, it's
Yeah,
it
I
was.
think he was the logical choice, I think.
Yeah.
He had been the manager of the Netherlands previously. Obviously, he's Dutch, played for the national team for many, many years. He seemed like a logical choice. I wonder, is it a little bit more of a safer choice, given that the roster is so talented? I think that's going to be the question for me is, can he get them over the top?
Yeah. I think he can. I think he can. But and I guess the reason why I say that is because, you look at what he's done with teams like Barcelona, with, he recently had a little stint at Fulham, and or no, at Everton. It was at Everton. And he did some really great things with them in his short time there, And so I think he's got a proven track record. And so even though maybe it was a safe bet, I think it was a smart bet. So yeah, I think we can expect to see the Netherlands continue to climb up the ladder.
Yeah, I think so too. And you look at one of I'm just looking through kind of his managerial record. One of the things that he and his teams always do is score a lot of goals. And for the Netherlands, who is a team that loves to score a lot of goals, that's a good fit.
It's a good fit, yeah.
And they're a team that you're going to watch in European qualifiers. They're going to be scoring three and four at a time, for sure.
For sure.
And so they're a team that is going to be really strong. They're going to go far in the finals. So I think to me it's kind of like it's kind of like the Roberto Martinez question, where he's going to have this super talented roster. We know they're going to be there. We know they're going to get into the knockout stage. How far can he take them? So it'll be interesting to see how they do. And then the other nation, just the last nation from the World Cup that has officially moved on from their coach is Iran and Carlos Queiroz. I think that I was not impressed with Iran at the World Cup. Their team that I was a little bit surprised by, because just looking at our rankings, our numbers, Iran's a team that always, or has been in the last few years, pretty high up as one of the best, if not the best, Asian teams. And I watching them at the World Cup was, I did not come away impressed with their performance. Losing to England pretty handily. They lost to the United States. It was a much closer game, but it really feels like they need somebody that was gonna take them a little bit further, given the quality of the players on that team.
Yeah, no, I agree. And who that individual is, I don't know, but I think there's rumors that Kiros actually could end up maybe in the South Korea gig. I may be, again, don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure I've seen a rumor or two that that might be the case. But yeah, I mean, he kind of came in for the World Cup, I guess specifically, right? And so I don't know how his preparation went. I don't know. But what can you say? I mean, he came in, he tried to do a job, and it didn't quite go maybe the way that the people had hoped.
Yeah.
Especially with his familiarity already with the team, the nation,
exactly.
The people,
yep.
Right? Maybe we're expecting a little bit more. Didn't quite happen like that. So, yeah, it kind of feels a little disappointing in the end.
Yeah, and he, exactly to your point, came in to do a job, basically. He was the manager for 8 years, which is unbelievable, between 2011 and 2019. But I think this is the end for him with Iran. I think they're going to head in a different direction. It's been interesting because they're a country that, just looking back, they have tended to veer towards more the international manager as opposed to bring in an Iranian to lead the team. So it'll be interesting to see if they head in that similar direction. I think they will. To me, it feels like they're going to be looking probably to a manager that has managed internationally before, someone with a proven track record. I would not be surprised if they take a look, or at least try to take a look at some of the other coaches that are on this list that have coached teams that made the World Cup that could be out. But they also could go in a different direction. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with them. But they underachieved in my mind. And I think they need someone a little more steady and in it for the long haul.
Yep.
So that's Iran. And then just the last one, which we'll probably spend a little bit of time talking about, is the United States. And they have not officially confirmed that Greg Berhalter is no longer the manager. But it's a little weird right now. Berhalter is currently the manager, officially.
But also currently under review.
So for those who have not been following the drama with the United States men's national team, a story was released about Greg Berhalter from 30 years ago, that implicated him in an incident. And it turns out that the culprit of who released that information was the mother of Giovanni Reyna, and who was Greg Berhalter's wife's former roommate. So quite the drama. And I think people are not sure, like, would this have happened if Gio played a little bit more at the World Cup? I'm not sure that it would. So there's a lot going on with the United States national team. There have also been rumors that they're interested in reaching out to additional coaches. So what do you think is going on with the United States? Who do you think is going to be the manager 3 months from now?
That's a really good question. I don't know. I mean, so they had a press conference earlier this week. It was made very clear that they're, like, taking their time with this process. Mm-hmm. So they've got Anthony Hudson in there right now.
Yep.
He handled the January camp, which, by the way, for anyone who doesn't know, there's been some January camps. So the U.S. had one, Serbia had one, Iceland, Finland, Sweden. Yep. They all had one. I think Norway might have had one as well.
USA lost to Serbia and drew Colombia. So
that's right. Yeah. And these are all made up of domestic players, mostly who are kind of out of season right now. So Hudson led the January camp. He's not highly rated. He's just kind of a temporary solution, I think. And who is really actually going to come in? That's a great question. I don't know. I would have zero hesitation if Jesse Marsh ends up leaving Leeds at some point in the next 6 months. That would not surprise me at all.
Mm-hmm.
But we've also heard rumor that the Federation approached Zidane about coaching, and also our friend Jose Mourinho. So I don't know who's a great fit. I mean, Mourinho, he's never coached a national team before. We would be his first. Is there a major difference? Yeah, I think there's a huge difference between coaching a national team and coaching a club team. Mm-hmm. So is he going to adjust to that well? I have no idea. I'm not a huge fan of his management style.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how familiar is he with Americans and how they play? I don't know. I would imagine not too familiar. In fact, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure he's been one of the big bashers of American players in the past. Maybe his tune has changed since we have a very talented team now. I don't know. But, the U.S. right now is a mess. We've got parents. If you're not familiar with how the system here in the U.S. works, and I promise I won't get on my high horse here, but I work in the youth system in the U.S. right now, and it is a cluster, a real cluster for sure. Like, and so to have one of the parents on the national team, like, act like the parents on these youth teams here act like, it's just like, I just shake my head. I'm like, no wonder we have a systemic issue here with parents and parental behavior on the sidelines. And I mean, it's a huge issue. So it's a real shame. I'm disappointed in the Reinas. I think it backfired a little bit on them. I don't think that's quite how maybe they were hoping things would go down. Like,
I think that's probably fair.
Claudio, you know, what was his role at Austin? So at the MLS franchise in Austin, Austin FC,
I'm not sure.
Was he like the technical director? Anyways, he had a big role there. GM maybe or something. I can't remember, but he's since kind of stepped down and he's trying to kind of shrink back into the limelight now a little bit or into the whatever.
Yeah.
Into the background. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the other thing is like, I don't know that they would have even kept Berhalter had this incident not happened. And this comes to light.
I would like to think that. I really would like to think that. But this is U.S. soccer that we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, they shouldn't. They really shouldn't. I mean, he's had his cycle, and I think it's time to move on.
Yeah. Jesse Marsh feels to me like the logical choice.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know if it's the best choice. It seems like it's kind of headed in that direction. I am not surprised they've kicked the tires on some bigger names. But it is rare, right, with the in the last at least 30 years almost, with the exception of Jurgen Klinsmann, all the American national team coaches have been American. So it is a little bit it is a little bit of a shift, but I think you did make a good point, is that national team experience. And when you look through experience, the only ones with national teams team experience are the ones who've coached the United States national team. So there's not some diamond in the rough out there, just some American that's been coaching some other national team for years and years and had tons of success. That guy does not exist.
Right.
So I think you have two options. One, do you want to go for another American coach who's coming from the club space? Or do you want to go perhaps with an international coach who has more experience at the international level? And so I don't know. I'm a little torn there. You know, I look through this name of coaches that have left other national teams. I don't know that any specifically stands out to me as, hey, this guy would be a great hire for the United States. So I don't know. I'm curious to see what they do. But to me, it feels like we're just inevitably headed to Jesse Marsh, which is not necessarily a bad thing.
Or Bob Bradley.
Bob's always in the mix.
Bob's
I
always in the mix.
miss when Bob was in Egypt. It was great. And he did a great job for the United States also. So he's a name that's always out there. He's getting a little bit older now. He's 64. It's not too old. But I don't know if he's somebody that might be interested. We'll see. But yeah, it feels to me at this point that while Berhalter's not been officially removed from the role permanently, it seems like it's impossible that they would keep him. So we will see. I think if the United States offered Jesse Marsh the job, I think he would take it.
Are you saying like right the second?
It's tough because Lee's, I mean, they're in the middle of the season still. So he might not take it immediately. But if they said, right, the United States has CONCACAF Nations League in March, and he said, you know, we're gonna have someone stay on if it's even if it's Anthony Hudson is interim, you know, through then, and then we'd like to bring you out ahead of the Gold Cup this summer. I think he would move for that. But we'll see.
I would like to hope so. I really would.
Yeah.
And I guess, I just think he has to leave Leeds first, I think.
I know. And it's tough too, because he's been there not even a year yet. And for an American coach to be coaching first in the United States and throughout Europe and then move to a Premier League team, that's a big deal. That's not a thing that happens often. And that is a big deal. So I think, yeah, I think it would be tough for him to give it up. I think he would do it though, but we'll see. So, all right. So, a lot of coaching changes. That's just going down this list. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 11 of the 32 World Cup teams that we just discussed with a coaching change already in just, you know, just over a month since the end of the World Cup, or at least potentially a coaching change. So more to come. There were a few other changes. I don't know if you want to run down a list of just some of the other changes, coaching in and out of non-World Cup teams.
So, some of these are new to both Brandon and I, so we maybe won't go into too many details. But I thought it would be good for people to know. Bosnia actually has made a change. So Avilo Petev is out, and they've brought in a guy named Faruk Hazibegic. Don't know a ton about him. He used to coach the Montenegro national team. I think it was during this last cycle, actually, but I think it was only for like a year. It was a really brief stint. So he wasn't there long. And he also coached Bosnia before, back in 1999. So a little bit of national team experience there with him. We'll see how he does. Bosnia, a team kind of on the ups, right? They just got
Yeah,
promoted in
absolutely.
Nations League.
Yeah, they're moving up to League A in the UEFA Nations League.
So some good things going on there, and hopefully he can continue that. Not 100% sure why the change came about. I don't know if it was an internal dispute.
Yeah, it's his contract expired, and it seems like they just didn't renew
He
it.
just didn't renew it.
And
There we
just
go.
kind of let him go. So I agree. That is surprising when you see a coach have success like that. There's only so much they could have done in getting promoted in the UEFA Nations League from League B to League A is definitely a big accomplishment. So That one I thought was a little bit surprising that Bosnia did choose to move in a different direction.
Some of you may be aware that Kisuke Honda, the former Japanese international, is now coaching. He's been coaching the Cambodia national team recently. He's been let go, so he is no longer coaching there. One that we're going to talk about here in just a second, maybe a little bit more, is Park Hang-seo from Vietnam, the Vietnam coach. So he it was well known that he was leaving after the AFF Championship. We're going to talk about the AFF Championship here in a second, but he has actually done a remarkable job with Vietnam, especially during this last cycle. Got them into World Cup qualifying into the final round. Has really taken the team, taken the game there, and really pushed for professionalization. Pushed his players to try to get to the next level, whatever that may be. Hats off to him. He's done a great job, and Vietnam is going to have a real task with trying to bring in someone now to continue to push them forward. They kind of have an aging, a little bit of an aging national team, and they're kind of a team in Asia now that is maybe on the downside of a hill, and maybe they've kind of hit the heights. And so if they're going to try to turn things back around again, or at least continue in the general direction, an upward trajectory, I think they have a real task on their hands to try to bring someone in to do that. So
I'm curious to see if he might get some consideration for South Korea,
I think he's in the mix.
because he is Korean.
Yep.
He's had a lot of success in Vietnam. Korea, I was just talking about a little bit earlier, with their roster is a little on the older side or getting towards that point. Park Hang-seo is 65 years old. I think he's been around for a while, and has some good national team experience. So I would not be surprised to see his name in the mix, for South Korea manager.
Yeah, for sure. Very well respected gentleman as well, especially in Southeast Asia. So, yeah, that would not be surprising. Oleksandr Petrikov, he was the coach for Ukraine, and he is no longer. So Ukraine has a task to bring in someone new. Another country that starts qualification for Euros here in March. So I would expect to see somebody coming in that seat here very quickly. Not sure who that may be. So in terms of coaches who are out, that's kind of our list. Some coaches have been brought in. So this one was really interesting. And you and I were chatting when I sent you this. You were like, "Oh, that's an interesting. That's an interesting." So, Avram Grant from is now the new coach for Zambia. So we'll see what he can do there with the former African champions. We already talked about Koeman with the Netherlands, and De La Fuente is the new manager of Spain. Roberto Martinez for Portugal. This one I also found very interesting. So
Agreed.
Albania has brought in Silvinho. You may be familiar with that name, former player. But he has actually also brought in for his extended coaching staff Pablo Zabaleta and Dorivo. So Silvinho, he's coached both Olympique Lyon and Corinthians in the past. So he does have a little bit of pedigree, and he'll be taking over the Albania national team as they get started on their European qualification quest. So very interested to see how that goes.
Yeah, I'm as well. That to me, it was just looking through this list of like, that is interesting, and did not expect to see that. I'm very curious to see what happens with Albania. for Euro qualifying there in a group with Poland, the Czech Republic, the Faroe Islands, and Moldova, and the top two qualify automatically. So they, if they're able to do better than the Faroe Islands and Moldova, they would only need to finish above either one of Poland or Czech Republic to qualify for Euro. So that feels very interesting to me. I'm very curious to see how that works out and see if they can really find something there in terms of just, I would have never expected them to hire that staff. That was not on my list of guys I would have expected, but I'm going to be watching closely. I'm very interested to see what happens with Albania.
Yeah, agreed. And I think they're definitely capable of I think especially at home getting results against either of those two nations, Poland or Czech Republic. And yeah, if this coaching staff can bring the team together and push them forward, I guess the world is their oyster. So yeah, it's a really interesting grab and definitely caught my eye as well. So I'm looking forward to watching how that unfolds.
I'm excited about the next one on the list.
I know, me too. So this is a good one. So Jamaica, somehow I guess they announced this last year and I completely missed it. They have brought in the former Iceland manager, Heimir Hallgrímsson, who
The
took
dentist.
the dentist, that's right, who took Iceland to the World Cup. When they qualified in, was that 2018? So yeah, it's 2018. Yeah, so Jamaica really, I'm impressed that they would go out and try to get, I guess, a foreign coach. I don't think it's unusual for them to have a foreign coach, but this one is definitely, I don't want to say out there, but I don't know. I'm excited about it. I'm excited. I'm hoping that he can do something magical. We've Jamaica got their new kit sponsor with Adidas, right? It's like a match made in heaven. So
You were disappointed with the kits, though.
I was disappointed with the kits. I have to be honest. But the training jacket
The
was really
teaser, the
nice.
teaser was so good.
The teaser was really good. The training jacket looks nice. I like the training jacket. The training shirt's okay, but yeah, I think I have to see him in person first. I have to see him on the players. So
So it's Jim. I did not realize Jamaica's not been to the World Cup since 1998.
it's been a long time.
That is a long time, especially coming out of CONCACAF. I did not expect that.
But you would
And
expect that to change for this next one though, right?
I think so. I think there are enough CONCACAF spots that they will get in maybe towards the back end. And I think it's great they brought in a manager that has taken a team to the World Cup. That's huge. What I'm interested in with Jamaica as well, and Winnie Schaefer was the last non-Jamaican coach that was a bit notable there. I think with Jamaica, one of the things that I have been interested to see, and maybe is shifting a little bit, is that there are a lot of players with Jamaican eligibility that have not played for the Jamaican national team. And you think of a guy like Raheem Sterling, where it's like, okay, he's not going to probably turn down the chance to play for England. But they got Mikhail Antonio, Leon Bailey's playing for Jamaica. And I'm curious to see if there are more of those that dual eligibility that maybe you bring in a guy that's like, okay, I've taken players to the World Cup before. Maybe he gets some more of those players that have the option to choose Jamaica or another country, and they do choose Jamaica. I think that's also something that they can continue to build on, because there are a lot of players out there that could play for Jamaica and really make a difference. So I think there's a lot of opportunity there. And it seems like an unusual fit, but I think it's a good fit for Jamaica.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I'm very excited to see what they can do. And and what changes he brings, to the table. I mean, we're talking everything from mentality to formation to player selections. I mean, there needed to be some changes for sure with Jamaica, especially after this last qualifying cycle. They just were not they were just dreadful.
It's also, I think, a good spot too. Like, they're already in the Gold Cup this year. They've already qualified. They've got one match in March to finish up the Nations League. Mm-hmm. But it feels like they're in a spot where he can kind of experiment a little bit and try to figure things out. The Gold Cup is important, but it's not at the level of some of the other continental tournaments. And then you have things, again, we'll talk about just shortly, Copa America. And you think about, okay, how is, you know, could Jamaica qualify for that? I think they can. There's a lot of opportunity there. So I'm very interested to see what they're able to do.
Yeah. Going that dual national route is an interesting idea too, right? Like, as you were kind of alluding to. So really curious to see what he can do. So, all right. Cool. We talked about Farouk already for Bosnia. Mm-hmm. And then Egypt has a new coach as well, Rui Vitória. So he's Portuguese. He's coached mostly in Portugal. Be interesting to see what he can do for Egypt. He's taken a really deep dive into the Egyptian culture to try to understand the people. And I think that's great. I think that's an important piece of being a foreign coach. You need to understand or try to understand where your people are coming from, where your players are coming from and their backgrounds. Right. Yeah. So, we know Egypt always very talented, always near the top of Africa. Yeah. What can he do with them? We're going to find out soon.
I'm also interested to see what happens with Egypt, because obviously they missed out narrowly on the World Cup. I think you could easily make the argument that they were among the five best teams in Africa and just got a bad draw having to play against Senegal to go to the World Cup. I think with Egypt, though, I think the thing that's a little bit different, which it has worked, it's not to say that it hasn't worked, they have a lot of local based players. And when you look back, I think about Bob Bradley as well, how he kind of immersed himself in Egyptian culture and really tried to connect and become part of that Egypt squad and get to know all the players and so forth. So I'm curious and will be watching to see if we see the same thing out of Rui Vitória, if we see him really immerse himself, become more of that Egyptian, embedded in the Egyptian culture. But they've had foreign coaches a number of times. Carlos Queiroz was there briefly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hector Cooper was there. I mean, they've had it before. It seems to be the route that they've headed. But I'm curious to see if he's able to get Egypt really over that hump and get them back to the World Cup and really competing again at AFCON.
Agreed. Yeah. Now with the expanded nations for this next World Cup, mm-hmm. like this Egypt is one that you would think,
I think they should be there.
They should be there. Yeah, exactly.
And I think so.
Yeah. We're actually a little late to this one. He started in July last year. So he's already got three games under his belt, three wins, with Egypt. So
yeah,
100% record so far. So he's doing all right.
Yep. And Egypt will be at AFCON. So, he will definitely have that opportunity to get them back there.
Yep.
So those were all the coaches that we had in and out. There are some coaches that are not changing positions. The second one on the list, Joe, I'm going to leave till the end because I think that ties into the next section. Yeah. But three that are staying. So Moriyasu of Japan, Didier Deschamps in France, and then Graham Arnold for Australia. Three coaches that their teams all made the knockout rounds. In the case of France, obviously went to the final. But those three coaches will be back. Deschamps was extended through 26, Graham Arnold through 27. So that's enough to get them through the next cycle. Will be interesting to see if they do make it all the way through the end of that contract. But the intent at this point is those coaches will be staying on. So success from all three coaches at the World Cup. Was it surprising to you that any of those three stayed?
I was just gonna ask you that. So, yeah, the one that's surprising to me is Graham Arnold actually, for Australia. I think people were not in love with his tactics, with the way that he set up Australia, but he got Australia to a World Cup, and and he got them into the knockout stages, which no one expected. So maybe that speaks for itself, and maybe that's the motivation behind, why Australia decided to renew. So yeah, that one was definitely surprising when that popped up the other day. I was like, did a double take, like what? Because I did not think that the Socceroos would head in that direction. I thought he was gone. So yeah, what about you? Any of these?
I don't I'm a, maybe I guess a little surprised about Deschamps, but he's another tough one that just I mean he got them to the final. Like they are in the final, right? They went as far as you can go without winning, basically.
Yeah. He just seems to be, he has like the magic touch, right? Like, so this is his, that was the completion of his second cycle, right, with France, because he won the World Cup with them in 2018. He got to the final again in 2022. And clearly, as we've already mentioned, like that's extremely long for a national team coach. But with him, you just feel like there's no issue. Like it makes sense to renew, to keep going because he's got a good thing going. Why would you change it, right?
Very true. Very true. I totally agree. It feels like there's almost like I don't know if term limit is the right term, but kind of in international soccer or
Yeah.
football, excuse me.
The 4-year
You get
term.
to a certain point, and it's kind of like, all right, you've been here as long as you can be, and it's time to go in a different direction. But yeah, he's won, right? He has won the World Cup. He took them again as far as you can go without actually winning another World Cup. I mean, who are you going to find that's going to improve on that? That's the thing. And I think
Exactly.
to your point, they've decided we're not going to, and they're okay keeping him. So I think I was a little surprised that he stayed, but it makes sense that he stayed. And then so the other one that renewed, which was not a World Cup team, but it is interesting because we have another section that we're going to discuss here is Belmadi from Algeria. He's been there since 2018. He did not take Algeria to the World Cup this past cycle. He had a disastrous AFCON, and he is still there in the coach. That is surprising to me. I don't know how you feel about that one.
I think if you were to just look at it purely based on like results, then yeah, it's surprising. But I think if you take a deeper dive, maybe it's not quite so surprising. So they came extremely close to getting to the World Cup,
They did.
right? AFCON, well, yeah, AFCON was a horror show.
He also has won an AFCON in his career.
But that's true. So do those two cancel each other out? I don't know. But I think you can tell he's passionate about Algeria. right? You can see that when he's on the sidelines.
Absolutely.
And it's awesome, right? And maybe Algeria's approaching this from perspective of, okay, we have a guy who loves what he does. He loves our team. Like, he loves our country. And, like, the people love him.
Yeah.
Like, let's just see if he can get us over that hump, right? And get Algeria back to the World Cup. And maybe the thinking was as well, okay, look, expanded field of teams. So what happened this last round, this last cycle, may or may not happen in this next. It might be an easier path in, is what I'm trying to say, right? And so maybe, I don't know. I mean, I'm fishing here.
Yeah.
I'm fishing here. But yeah, it is, I do agree. It is a little surprising. Yeah. But I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I think I am too. And I think it's tough because Algeria has not been at the last two World Cups. And to your point, yes, the path will be easier heading into 2026 with the expanded field. I think you look at what he's accomplished and what he has failed to accomplish, and I think it comes back to the same question that I was saying about Deschamps, is do you think he's the right guy for the job to take you, you know, the furthest? Or is there someone out there that could do it better? And for them to land on, we think he's the guy, in an international football area where it's very much a what have you done for me lately area, I thought was a bit unusual. I don't hate the decision to do it, but I think it was unusual. And they've made that decision. That's where they're at. I want to head into the next section a little bit now, where we were going to discuss is he's got some reinforcements coming. And there are going to be some new Algerian players in the squad that have not played for Algeria previously. And it's not just one. We're seeing multiple players declare that they are going to play for the Algerian national team. So we've seen Wissam Aouar from Lyon, Ryan Aitnori from Wolves, Amin Gouiri from Rennes. There's been talk of other players. Ryan Cherki is one that his name has also been out there, as Algerians are really, really hoping that he will also decide to play for Algeria over France. And again, all of these players, it's France and Algeria.
Mm-hmm.
And so the three have already selected Algeria. I would not be surprised if there's more to come. But Algeria feels like a team that's going to be really, really good in the next few years.
Yep. And I just think there's something to having the stability with a coach.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just be curious to see how that pans out, right? Like, could this be a model potentially going forward? Because as we've talked about, you know, you see a lot of change with national team coaches.
Yeah.
But is there something to keeping for consistency's sake? I mean, it's really tough because, right, if the results aren't there, then, you know, he's got to go. But,
yeah,
so anyways, you're right. Algeria is really recruiting heavy. You know, they're definitely on that scene. And they've pulled in three excellent additions to their team. And, yeah, I mean, they were already a power before, and they're getting better. So, three really solid grabs.
Yeah, and so. I think you'll see more of this, I think, with Algeria. I would not be surprised if we start to see it a lot more with other countries as well.
Oh,
Morocco's
for sure.
Definitely one that stands out in my mind, as
mm-hmm.
they could end up with some players that had multiple options choosing those countries. So I would not be surprised if we continue to see more of this. And it's just gonna get more competitive. I think it's gonna level the playing field a little bit, and I think you're gonna see a lot of African nations really follow in Morocco's footsteps and continue to do more, not just continentally, but internationally.
Yep. No, I totally agree. And speaking of Algeria, right, we've got the African Nation Championships going on right now. So we just briefly
Actual
wanted to.
football. It's not, there's not nothing going on.
That's right. That's right. We just wanted to briefly mention that they've reached the final. The semifinals were today. The semifinals included four nations that had never reached that stage of the African Nation Championships, or CHAN. So the four teams were Algeria, Niger, Senegal, and Madagascar. And it's going to be an Algeria versus Senegal final. So congratulations to those teams. Yeah, if I'm being honest, we haven't caught too much of that one. But one that we did catch a lot of, at least I did. I don't know how much you were able to
Yeah,
catch,
a little bit.
but that was the AFF Championship. And in that one, Thailand beat Vietnam over two legs. So the way that it works is when you get into the knockout rounds, it's actually not each team gets a home and an away leg for those games. And the way that they did it is so you play your home game in your home and then you travel to the country that you're facing, right? So I thought that was really interesting. These are mostly Southeastern Asian nations, so your Thailands, your Vietnams, your Malaysia, like who am I missing over there?
Cambodia. I think we talked a little
Cambodia,
bit about
was it Cambodia? Indonesia.
Indonesia,
Yep,
Singapore.
yep. So this was actually the first time that I've ever watched this tournament, and I completely fell in love with it. It was very exciting. I was really captivated. I mean, we had a lot of full stadiums. The football was very entertaining, actually. Some really quality goals.
Yeah.
Just sensational. And so it was really fun to watch.
Yeah.
And yeah, I got super hyped on Malaysia. I'm excited to see what they can do going forward. I'm hyped on Thailand right now. And if I didn't mention this already, Thailand won. So yeah, it was a really good final. Thailand actually came back from being down in the first leg to win the away leg, and that kind of ended up being what propelled them to winning, I guess at home. So,
Yeah.
yeah, it was quality.
Yeah.
Most of these games were broadcast for free over YouTube, and so that's how, I was able to catch most of it. And they had English commentating teams on it. Yeah, it was a great advertisement for Southeast Asian football. I was really, really impressed. And so, yeah, Thailand. I just want to talk about them real quickly, and then I'll let
Yeah.
you get some words in. But yeah, the Th Thailand was they were fun to watch, and they kind of broke Vietnam's defensive streak. Vietnam hadn't given up any goals until they met Thailand in the final in the first leg, and then Thailand scored twice on them. And yeah, it was. They played really good football. They're coached by a guy. He's Brazilian German. So he's got heritage from, I guess, from both those countries, and looks like a total quality chap. He's seems to be doing really well with Thailand, and I think he's definitely putting himself out there as a coach who could potentially take over I guess a bigger, is that the right word, or better? I don't know. I don't,
A
but
higher ranked team.
there you go, a higher ranked team than Thailand, and maybe do quite well. So we'll see. He's there's been no rumors or anything of him leaving. Thailand has a they've now qualified for the Asian Cup, which is very exciting. And so yeah, we'll see if they can make some noise there. And I am actually hopeful that we might be able to see them qualify for their first World Cup, which I think would be really cool. That's obviously a monumental task. They've got a long ways to go with that, but if they, if they continue to play like they did during this tournament and continue to make strides forward like that, I think that they have a decent chance.
Yeah.
So,
I think you're on the right path. I think so with Thailand, because the qualifications expanded pretty substantially for Asia. They made the final round of qualifying. If you looked at the qualification records and the same number of teams qualified this year that will in 2026 or for the 26 World Cup, they would have been right there. So seeing them qualify, I don't think is an impossibility by any stretch. They're definitely a team to watch. They've progressed pretty far in qualifying the last two cycles for the World Cup and just hadn't been able to get it done. To your point, they qualified for the knockout round in the last Asian Cup. They're going to be at the 2023 Asian Cup, which is now not taking place in 2023, but it's the 2023 Asian Cup. And actually, I take that back. I think it is taking place in 2023. It'll probably be postponed till 2024, but we'll see. But yeah, Thailand's definitely a team that is one to keep an eye on in Asia. They could easily be at the World Cup for sure. The other thing I wanted to mention, which I think you alluded to somewhat, which I think is a little bit different if you're not as familiar with either Asian or African football, but whereas more so with the other continents, they have these continental tournaments every 4 years, in the case of AFCON every 2 years, but continent and Gold Cup as well. But in Asia and Africa, they have these sub-regional tournaments. And so this AFF Championship, I think it used to be called the Asian ASEAN, the Southeast Asian Championship. They have that. The Gulf Cup just took place as well. That's more about centered around the Arabian teams. Africa's got a few in the COSAFA and SACAFA Cup. So they have these sub-tournaments. But what I have always seen, to your point, is that there's a lot of interest locally. It really generates a lot of buzz in the region. And I think the thing that was great this time around is they're making it more visible. The COSAFA Cup in Africa was one that we covered a little bit, but people just didn't, you couldn't watch it anywhere. And so you're waiting for updates on Twitter or wherever you're trying to get information from. And it's not as exciting if you can't actually watch the games. You're just waiting for updates. But I think continuing to promote some of these subcontinental tournaments, YouTube's great. I think the Gulf Cup was on ESPN Plus here in the United States. Having visibility to those things, I think will just continue to grow those countries and those tournaments. So I was excited to watch some of those things that I think in the past we've not really been able to see more of those smaller continental tournaments.
Yeah, and again, I go back to the I guess the local support, right? Like they were all really well attended. I mean, I mean, full stadiums, jumping up and down, music, like singing. Yeah, I mean, it was, it was the whole.
It's not the right, like you have the whole of Asia champion, but you also the number of countries and just geography that participated, it's a large region of the world. So you're essentially playing to be champions of that fairly large region of the world, and it's big.
Yeah, no, it totally was. By the way, if anybody can tell me how to make out the elephant in the Thailand national team logo, please show me, because I keep looking at this thing and I cannot figure it out. So, just a quick side note.
Turning my head to the side.
Like,
Maybe I see it.
do you? See, I can't see it. I mean, I see what I
I'm
think
not
is this
sure.
tusk, but then it's like turned to the opposite
Great,
way
great,
from.
great point of debate.
Yeah.
I think this could make it onto YouTube. If it does, leave the response in the chat
That's
below.
right.
Comment below. Where
Let
is
us
the
know.
elephant? Joe
That's
wants to
right.
know where the elephant is.
Show Joe. Hashtag show Joe.
Yes, leave it in the comments. I don't see it. I'm
I
like turning
know.
my head sideways, but
I know, right? It's really difficult. Okay, we better move on. So we do we have so the last piece that we kind of wanted to talk about, we have some format changes, and I'll let Brandon kind of take it over, but there's some format changes that have recently been announced for both European qualifiers and also for the Copa America next year.
So the Copa America, we'll start with that one. So in the past, the 10 CONMEBOL teams had participated. They would typically invite two guests and make it a 12-team tournament for the Copa America Centenario. That was the 100-year anniversary. They extended that to 16 teams. For 2024, they're going to do that again and have 16 teams at the Copa America. It's going to be held in the United States, they announced as well. I don't know if that's going to be a permanent thing where it's every 4 years. I would not be surprised to see that be the case, where the Copa America becomes a 16-team tournament with the 10 CONMEBOL teams and six CONCACAF teams. So there's not going to be a Qatar. There's not going to be guests from outside the region. It's going to be 10 CONMEBOL, six CONCACAF. The six CONCACAF teams, what they did announce was the CONCACAF teams will qualify, and so they're not going to automatically get into the Copa America. The United States is not automatically in as host. I'm sure there's no scenario that CONCACAF will construct that excludes the United States, but they're not in. They have to actually qualify. So CONCACAF is going to use the CONCACAF Nations League. It's not going to be, from what I've seen, the 2022-23 current edition that ends in March. It's going to be the next edition, which I believe is going to start in the fall and then head into next spring, that they're going to use as the qualification for the Copa America. So CONCACAF has not indicated, one, if they're changing the structure of the leagues, if they're going to keep it with 12 teams in League A and leave it as four groups of three teams each. That's not really conducive to getting two teams to qualify, getting six teams to qualify. What they could do in that scenario is, perhaps, if they want to leave it the same, is take the four teams that win their group, have them qualify directly. Those would be four of the teams. What they could then do is then take perhaps the four second place teams from League A, and maybe the four group winners from League B. You have eight teams there. You could have essentially a tournament, a four team tournament, with two different paths, where the winner of those tournaments, each of those two tournaments, would be the fifth and sixth team. If they don't change the leagues, to me, that's probably the most logical way that they get to the six teams. I think the other way that they could do it is either if they expand League A, which I think we've talked about a little bit. I've been a pretty big proponent of expanding League A a little bit, just because I think League C is tremendously unbalanced right now. And do something that way, or maybe they make groups of three groups of four and just have the top two from each group in League A qualify as the six team. So I think there are a number of options of how they could get the six CONCACAF teams alongside the CONMEBOL teams, but CONCACAF has not announced the specifics there yet, just that teams will qualify through the Nations League. So I'm excited. I think it's a good addition. I think the Copa America, getting some more teams into the, and I mean, we've also talked about that, and just how every tournament is expanding. The Copa America was one that, just from a numbers perspective, was so far behind every other continental tournament. It makes sense that they wanted to add additional teams to it. So, I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be good to have that CONCACAF CONMEBOL mix. I think it'll also be a little bit interesting to see just how it sets up, because you're probably going to have a pretty big disparity between Argentina and Brazil, and then maybe some of the CONCACAF teams that make it. But I still think it's going to be a good thing for them to have a 16-team tournament as opposed to a smaller tournament.
Yeah, it's the only thing I just get slightly bothered, and I really shouldn't, but I just get slightly bothered by the fact that it keeps coming here.
Yeah.
Like, and I really shouldn't. I mean, I think money obviously is the number one driver for that. You're going to have probably full stadiums for a vast majority of those games.
Yeah.
Considering the melting pot that is the United States. And if, you know, if you took this tournament and these same teams and put it down in wherever in South America, you know, if you get a game between Peru and Paraguay in Brazil,
yeah,
you may not necessarily have, you might not sell as many tickets to that as you would maybe here in the US, right? So I understand that.
Yeah.
But I also think it would be a really good experience for the CONCACAF nations to be able to go down to South America to that hostile environment and play those games. So I don't know. I mean, there's that. And then this is their confederation's major showcase. Right. And so to take that away from the natives, I don't know. I feel kind of bad for some reason, and I shouldn't feel bad. It wasn't even my decision, but I'm like, so I just wanted to share that because that's kind of my opinion.
I do hope that if they settle on this 16 team format as the go forward model, that to your point, it's not always in the United States. I think it's important that other countries host as well. And I think it's also important, like you said, that some of these CONCACAF teams get the opportunity to go to some of the South American nations. So it's just the tough thing. It's like you look at where, and you look back at the Copa America Centenario, the United States just has these huge football stadiums with massive capacities. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if CONCACAF cares or CONMEBOL cares. It's like you have a 70,000 seat stadium. If you sell 40,000 seats to every game and it's right three quarters full at best, they're still probably making more money selling it that way. So that's unfortunately a lot of the consideration, it seems like, at this point. So I do hope that that does not become just every year is going to be there. It should be a rotating host country.
Sorry to sidetracked. All right, let's to the European qualifiers we go.
Yes. So that was one change that was announced just in terms of format, which was a pretty big change because it is a continental tournament. And the other big change that was announced almost at the exact same time was the change in European qualifiers. So it was not specifically called out how 100% how everything is going to work. But when UEFA threw out the term European qualifiers, they're referring to Euro qualifiers and World Cup qualifiers. It's both. Yep. Mm-hmm. And so if you look back at World Cup qualifying, European qualifying this cycle, typically UEFA has 10 groups. They'll have 10 groups of either five teams or six teams. Sometimes the winners and second place teams qualify automatically, like in the Euro qualifiers. Sometimes, like in the World Cup, there are playoffs. What UEFA has decided to do is move to 12 groups. So they're no longer going to have 10 groups of five or six. They're going to have 12 groups, and the groups will only have either four or five teams. They've sold it a little bit as perhaps you see some more volatility. You have fewer games. You have less margin for error. And you may not always see the exact same teams at the top. I think we still will, but I really think what UEFA is trying to do is minimize the number of meaningless games. And you look at the total number of games in comparison, right? Teams are either going to play eight qualifying games or six qualifying games. That's it. Right now, they either play eight or 10. So you're drastically cutting down the number of matches, but because you're spreading the teams out more, and I think you see this a little more with AFCON qualifying, I think that's probably the best comparison just from a quality perspective. You see less of those meaningless games where you have the best teams playing against the worst team and then the second worst team. And I think that was really they wanted to try to get away from as many of those games as there are now. And so I think the games become more meaningful. Sure, you're still going to see some of your best teams playing against teams that are in lower pots, and it might not be as competitive, but I certainly think there is something to the volatility aspect, where if for example, the 12 groups, and as UEFA is thinking about World Cup qualifying, only the top team in each group is going to qualify for the World Cup. And so if you're only playing six games, right, you don't have much margin for error, and there could be some surprises there. So I think there's something to that. They're integrating it a little more with the UEFA Nations League, which they already have done in terms of qualifying, but I think the intent is not to burden teams with this many meaningless games. And I think you'll probably see they added a little aspect with the Nations League with some promotion relegation playoffs now as well. So not only the bottom team gets relegated, the top team gets promoted, there's also going to be some additional interaction with some of the other teams in the table. So they're really emphasizing the Nations League, which I find interesting, and connecting that with qualifying. And so yeah, I think they're trying to put more emphasis on every game and not have as many meaningless games. So I think it makes sense. And I also think just fewer games in qualifying is going to reduce the travel burden and everything. So I think it's a good change for Europe. I think you'll see better quality, which I think is ultimately their goal there.
Yep, no, it's very exciting. I'm looking forward to it, and bring it on.
Absolutely. So a lot going on for there being
Nothing.
nothing major right now. But coaching changes after the World Cup, a lot of these format changes. We're heading into March where we're going to have a lot of qualifying. The CONCACAF Nations League is going to come to a conclusion. European qualifying kicks off. AFCON qualifying picks up again. So a lot of qualifying will be taking place in March. And so it definitely between the conclusion of the World Cup and when that starts, it feels like that's really when teams are trying to figure things out. Like, all right, this period has ended, what's starting next? And there's been a lot of changes. So a lot going on despite not a lot of matches being played for continental qualifying.
That's right. And we're bringing it to you.
We are
That's
as best as we can.
right.
As best as we can. So yeah, it's a pretty long episode. So just want to thank everyone for tuning in and listening and coming along with us as we walk through some of these changes and both coaching and in formatting. And yeah, we're looking forward to what's to come in March. We'll have previews for those tournaments and qualifying as those kick off, and more to look forward to from us at the Window Pod. So again, just want to thank all the listeners. You can follow us on Twitter at Window INTL Pod. You can follow Joe on Twitter at 12th Yank. You can follow myself, Brandon, at @we_global. We Global Football has got international football rankings, statistics, projections, odds, all that good stuff. So a lot more to come there, and we're looking forward to bringing you another episode pretty soon. So thanks again for listening, and we're looking forward to the March qualifying. Thanks again.